Up next, we have the Elizabeth and Jack Knight House from Fort Worth.
Yeah, and this is Steve Klein. I'm going to be recusing myself from this one.
Sure, thanks, Steve. And Hannah, there should be a little box that you can check for his recusing himself.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, this is Greg. Everybody can see the screen?
Looks good.
Okay, great. Elizabeth and Jack Knight House. This nomination was prepared by Susan Allen Klein, consultant for owners Bob and Sharla Tesh. The Elizabeth and Jack Knight House is an excellent local example of a French eclectic style single family dwelling. It was constructed circa 1930 near the campus of Texas Christian University, perched on a prominent location at the junction of Simondow Avenue and Alton Road. This map shows the neighborhood's proximity to downtown. The U-shaped lot is raised above Alton Road and Simondell Drive, giving the house a prominent presence as one heads south on either street, which are lined with large, mostly two-story period revival houses, as well as a few modern and ranch-style homes built between the 1920s through the mid-20th century. The house is identified as an example of a towered subtype of the French eclectic style and features a steeply pitched hip roof without a dominant front gable, flared eaves at the roof wall juncture, and brick masonry walls with stucco and half timbering decorative elements. Alterations have been minimal. The property retains excellent integrity. A round two-story tower with a spiral staircase features a steeply pitched conical roof, and this is located towards the facade's east end at the junction of the two wings. Multi-light casement windows illuminate an interior that includes a large living room with a pegged wood floor and vaulted ceiling. I'm going to take you around the building first. This is the east elevation, the south elevation, west elevation showing an integral garage, and the south and east elevations of that garage. And so here's the living room. The living room has a pegged wood floor and a vaulted ceiling bearing modified king post trusses, as well as a second story overlook. So this is the living room looking west, the enclosed patio with casement windows from the living room, and the spiral staircase. To the east of the front entrance is a spiral wood staircase. And again, this is inside the tower. At the east end of the living room is the overlook, fronted by a wood balustrade. The rear yard at the south property line features a historic greenhouse, which dates to at least 1941, but is likely older. The garden landscape is counted as one contributing resource. The side and rear yards contain mature trees, and the rear yard contains numerous garden areas. Some of the garden features include a flagstone walk, brick driveway, stone wishing well, a large fish pond, and a small rectangular fish pond. These may date to circa 1931. In 1929, Elizabeth M. Knight purchased two lots in Bel Air Estates for $3,200. Born in Fort Worth, Knight was active in numerous social organizations and used her skills as a gardener for the benefit of these associations and for the community at large. Miss Knight's house and the yard and greenhouse became tools for hand-on gardening instruction, particularly during the World War II era. It was noted, according to a newspaper article of the time, that she possessed a natural green thumb and engaged in thrifty practices that were especially valuable on the home front when people were encouraged to conserve resources and make sacrifices for the greater good. Jack Knight died in 1951, and Elizabeth sold the house to Robert and Annie Tesh in February 1952. Members of the Tesh family still own the house, and it is now designated as a Fort Worth Historic and Cultural Landmark. The Knight House is an excellent example of the picturesque French eclectic style that became fashionable in the United States between 1915 and the end of World War II. The nomination has lots of examples for comparison. In Fort Worth, this style surged in popularity in the 1920s as architects and builders who had served in France during World War II turned to the style for their residential work. So we have the Smith House on Bel Air Drive, a few blocks south of the Knight House, and then the Parker House, also on Simondale Drive, this one designed by Charles Stevens Dilbeck. And then this is some more of the work of the prominent Fort Worth architect, Joseph Patterson, the architect of this house. He designed the Knight House under the name Cotswold Studio. And so there's an example of one of his houses, his very own house on Dartmoor Court, and then a published design by Patterson of a Normandy farmhouse style design from Southern Home and Garden. The property is nominated at the local level under criterion C in the area of architecture. The period of significance is circa 1930 to circa 1941. And this period encompasses the construction of the house and the greenhouse. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Greg. And I'm not sure if Susan is here, if there's anyone who, excuse me, who'd like to speak on behalf of the nomination. Okay, I don't believe so. So we will entertain a motion from the board, please.
Hi, this is Susan.
Susan, yes, please go ahead.
I just wanted to thank the Teshes for bringing this forward. This house is a remarkable house, and so many people in the area around TCU know it and love it. You should have heard the comments that were made when it went before the local landmark commission, but we appreciate your consideration of it today.
Thanks very much, Susan, and I do apologize. I didn't mean to jump the gun. All right, we will now entertain a motion from the board.
Hi, this is Sayla, and I move that we recommend this property for listing under criterion C in the area of architecture at the local level of significance, at which this documentation fully justifies.
This is Tara. I second the motion.
Okay, thanks very much. Any discussion from the board? Okay, so the motion that we have is to move the Elizabeth and Jack Knight House forward at, under criterion C at the local level of significance. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries. Okay, up next we have the Della Phillips House.
Okay, this is Bonnie Wilson. I'll be presenting the final four nominations. So Kathleen Conti and Laura Caffrey were both students in Greg Smith's National Register course seminar at UT. And when they were both there, they both wrote drafts of this nomination for the Della Phillips House. THC staff married those two documents and finalized it for review today. The Phillips House, designed by noted architect John Saunders Chase, is in a post-World War II middle-class subdivision in East Austin on a prominent corner lot at East Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and Maple Street. The city of Austin recently designated the immediate neighborhood as a local historic district, and nearby are two other Chase-designed buildings, the Irene Thompson House, just two houses down from the Della Phillips House, and David Chapel. Built in 1965, the Phillips House is a 1.5-story mid-century contemporary style residence with a T-shaped plan and a cantilevered folded plate roof. Chase integrated the Phillips House into its steeply sloped site by tucking the two-car drive-through garage under the east side of the building's main level. One final note is that some of these photographs are from an earlier draft of the nomination, and they will be updated for submittal to the NPS. However, they are accurate to what the home looks like now, except for minor landscaping changes. Its most distinguishing exterior feature is the linear folded plate roofline with repeating green diamonds on the north and south elevations. The house shows Usonian influences. It is asymmetrically composed with green painted wood siding, has expanses of wood framed floor height windows and river rock walls. Exterior piers in the chimney are clad in smooth marble panels. A private garden on the west elevation is terraced with original river rock walls, a rock barbecue pit, and a fountain is extant near the entrance. Designed for entertaining, the interior plan is large, open, and full of natural light. The architect also designed pendant lamps throughout the house and used African mahogany for the dwelling's wood panel walls, exposed ceiling beams, and interior dividing wall frames. An elevator from the lower level garage to the main level is original to the house. The Phillips House has few alterations and retains excellent integrity to communicate its architectural and historical significance. Della Josephine Williams Phillips, a career educator in local public schools, became a co-owner of the Phillips Upshaw Funeral Home following the death of her husband, Gene, in 1960. 4 years later, she hired Houston architect John Chase and gave him creative license in the design of the nominated house. Her participation in numerous social, professional, and religious groups likely motivated Della's singular request that the home be built for entertaining. The Della Phillips House is demonstrative of residential work John Saunders Chase undertook at the beginning of his illustrious career. Chase, a native of Annapolis, Maryland, graduated Hampton Institute, now university, with a degree in architectural engineering. As the first African American to register to attend UT, he graduated the School of Architecture in 1952 and established his practice in Houston. In Austin, Chase is responsible for the design of several modern structures that, in addition to the Phillips House, includes the 1962 Thompson Residence, David Chapel, both of which you just saw, and the 1952 Texas State Association of Texas building, which was listed in the National Register in 2005. Chase's early work reflects his modern design sensibility and his long-term admiration for the work of Frank Lloyd Wright. The Phillips House represents mid-century Usonian philosophy with a low horizontal profile, window walls that integrate the outdoors to the open plan interior, and contrasting exterior materials of round river rock, smooth marble, and wood siding. Although not characteristic of Usonian design, the expressive folded plate roof is evidence of Chase's mastery of engineering and design as a modern, gregarious adaptation of Wright's signature low-slung cantilevered roofs. Two of Chase's contemporaneous commercial projects, the Colon Clinic and Riverside National Bank, also employed a folded plate roof. The 1965 Della Phillips House is nominated to the National Register of Historic Places as an outstanding local example of the work of John S. Chase's residential works. It's nominated for listing under Criterion C in the area of architecture at the local level of significance. And the period of significance is 1965, the year it was built. And I failed to note at the beginning of the presentation that the Travis County Historical Commission and Travis County Judge and Dr. Fred McGee all provided letters of support for this nomination. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Bonnie. Is there anyone present who'd like to speak on the Della Phillips House? Okay, and now we will entertain a motion from the board.
This is Tara Dudley. I move that we recommend Adela Phillips House for listing to the National Register under the local level of significance under criterion A based on re-documentation.
This is Steve. I'll second it.
Okay, thank you very much. Any discussion from the board?
Can I just clarify, because it does say criterion C and not A?
It's C.
It's C for architecture. I apologize if I misspoke.
Sorry about that. I was going to make a comment about A. My bad.
I do. I think we might need to amend the motion then.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. What was the motion? I might have misheard.
I'll just repeat the motion because it might have been my mistake because criterion A is in my brain.
No, you said C. You said C.
I did say C. I thought I was reading it so I wouldn't mess up, but okay.
We'll call that the first motion. Okay.
Oh, you did. Okay. So I think we're okay then.
Okay. That's what I wrote down. So
okay. Thanks.
I'll just say I'm super excited to see this nomination for this house. And I'm like, the level of integrity in this house and the interior is just, it's a really exciting property. And I think Tara and I were both in graduate school with one of the original preparers of this nomination. So it has been a long, long time coming. And I'm really excited to see it finally brought forward.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, this is Steve. I concur with Hannah. I was just fascinated with the story of the house, the architecture, the architect. And so it's really great that this is something that's being recognized and better, now that it is great that it's finally being recognized as it should be. Thank you.
This is Sayla. I also wanted to add that it was refreshing to see that we were recognizing, this monumental architect, but also recognizing a woman owner and a woman of color, and that was written into the nomination. Just glad to see that.
Yeah, on that note, I do have a question. I told you I had criterion A on the brain. As far as the home's significance for ethnic heritage, African-American heritage, there is a draft nomination that was in the hands of the history program for the Thompson House, which is another Chase home that would have recommended that property for listing under criterion A. As you all know, that home and the Thompson home are in what is now the City of Austin's local historic district, the Holy Cross District. And so in consideration with the tremendous African-American history and the development of that neighborhood, as far as the residents, of course, John Chase being a preeminent African-American architect. And I'm just wondering if there was any discussion as far as that, especially considering movements at present to really make efforts at recognizing preservation of buildings that are relevant to the history of people of color. And I know we only need to list this property under one criterion, but having that, particularly as we're talking about numbers and statistics and, you know, properties that are listed for Hispanic heritage or African-American heritage or whatever the case may be, if that is not something that could and should be considered. And I would also invite that the Thompson House also finally come up because it's now of age. I think that draft nomination was written in 2009 or something.
Tara, I think Tara is absolutely, yeah. No, I was just gonna sorry. Say, I think that that's something that was, just an unfortunate, actually, oversight on my behalf is not including that, because for all the points that you brought up, absolutely, Tara, and so I thank you for bringing that up. And yes, the Irene Thompson House is, I did refer to that nomination when I was putting these two together, and so I hope that one moves forward as well.
I agree. Can anyone amend the nomination, or should we have Tara amend amend the recommendation if she wishes? I'm in agreement. I think with the owner, her importance in the community, the architect, this location in Austin, I think it's absolutely appropriate.
Mm-hmm. I have no problem amending the recommendation. So I move that we recommend the Della Phillips House for listing to the National Register at the local level under criterion C for architecture, under criterion A for ethnic heritage, African-American, based on the documentation. And I think only minor tweaks and, you know, adding a sentence here or there would be necessary to just bring that together, because the information is in the nomination.
I would second.
Was I that would seconded? Andrea? Dr. Yes. Roberts, was that you that seconded? Okay, thank
yes.
you.
I apologize just for procedural matters. We do need the original, the second on the original motion to also agree to amend the motion. So I'm not sure who that person
was. That was me, and I was ready to second it.
So. Okay, great. Okay. Okay, so we are now approving the amended motion to move the Della Phillips House forward. I've lost it on my screen, but under criterion A and criterion C at the local level, if I am not mistaken, is that correct?
That's correct. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Up next, we have the Willie Wells House in Austin.
Everything together. Just one second, please. Okay, again, this is Bonnie Wilson. Terry Myers with Kristen Brown prepared the nomination for the property owner. The Travis County Historical Commission, as well as the county judge, have reviewed and provided letters of support for the nomination. The Willie Wells House is a small one-story frame building on a narrow rectangular lot in a residential neighborhood characterized by early 20th century frame buildings and churches associated with South Austin's African-American Brackenridge community. Built in 1910, the house is side gabled with a partial width front porch and a shed roof 1929 rear addition. It is board and batten siding, plain wood porch posts, an original wood front door, and 4x4 wood sash windows that are replicas of original windows, which replaced aluminum windows that were installed in the 1990s. Cornice returns are the main stylistic element to this modest house. A non-historic rear addition was removed. A new full facade wood deck replaced it with no removal or destruction of the original board and batten rear wall. Renovations to the house since 2018 opened the previously partitioned interior kitchen and living room. Despite its open concept, the interior retains historic separation of public and private spaces with two bedrooms intact that date to the 1920s addition. Exterior rehabilitation work removed non-historic or non-original features that postdated the period of significance. The work was based on physical investigations by a preservation architect, comparison with similar houses in neighboring blocks, and photographic evidence from an earlier survey. Whenever possible, wood elements were repaired rather than replaced, and the house retains an estimated 80 to 90% of its original siding, interior shiplap walls and ceiling, and longleaf pine floors. Overall, the house retains good integrity to communicate its historical significance. The Willie Wells House at 1705 Newton Street is significant as the childhood home and only property associated individually with legendary Negro League shortstop Willie Wells. Wells was raised with four brothers in his mother's South Austin home, the nominated building, from the age of about 5 to 18. He lived there from the age of about 5 to 18 when the St. Louis Stars recruited him to play in the Negro Major Leagues. The sandboard map just shows the 1929 addition to the rear of the house. Between 1924 and 1954, Wells played for 27 different teams in 27 different cities across the United States, Canada, Mexico, Cuba, and Puerto Rico. His peripatetic lifestyle and grueling schedule left him little opportunity to settle in one place for any length of time. His career reflects the nomadic, often transitory lifestyle of baseball players of his era. This was especially true of players in the segregated Negro leagues, who were required to travel more and play more games at lower salaries than their white counterparts in professional baseball. In his first two seasons with the majors, Wells became one of the league's shining stars, both at bat and on the field as shortstop. Considered a living legend by many in the late 1940s and early 50s, Wells' best contributions to the sport may have been his ability to mentor young players, including Jackie Robinson. Throughout his career, Wells regularly returned to the nominated house, where he spent time with his mother, daughter, brothers, and extended family. In 1973, he returned to live there permanently. He granted the occasional front porch interview to reporters who happened to find him. They often commented on his unexplained absence from the Baseball Hall of Fame. For the most part, however, Wells lived in relative obscurity and near poverty in a South Austin home, and he passed away in 1989. Wells' enormous skill at shortstop made him one of the sport's greatest players and ultimately led to his posthumous induction into the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 1997, one of only 18 Negro League players to receive the honor. The Willie Wells House at 1705 Newton Street is significant as the childhood home and is the only property associated individually with Willie Wells. It well represents the baseball legend's early training and his continued ties to his family and South Austin community. It is therefore nominated to the National Register for its under Criterion B in the areas of ethnic heritage, Black, and entertainment and recreation for its association with Willie Wells, a significant and nationally recognized sports figure whose achievements ultimately transcended the color barrier in baseball. Period of significance is 1912 to 1971, which represents the years the house was associated with Willie Wells through the 50-year threshold.
Okay, thanks very much. Do we have anyone here to speak on behalf of this nomination? Not sure that we do. Terry Myers, are you with us?
Hi, I'm here. I don't know why it didn't unmute, but yes, I'm here. I'm so excited about this house, about this nomination. I hoped that in the nomination, I was able to convey the extraordinary significance of Wells as a baseball player, but also his associations with this house and this neighborhood, which was the Brackenridge neighborhood, was centered around the Brackenridge segregated school for colored children, quote unquote. And this neighborhood is now in the Bolden Creek Neighborhood Association, which is currently undergoing incredible gentrification. Many houses like this one that were two or three room houses to start with have been demolished and redeveloped with modern construction. But this house has remained very intact from its period of significance, which includes the original side gabled house and the 1929 addition, which may have been funded by Wells. He had soared to stardom with the St. Louis Stars in the Negro major leagues and was at the top of his game at the time the addition was made. There are many letters and evidence of his return to this house. He stayed here when he was not playing baseball, which I grant wasn't very often because he did play constantly throughout he actually played in the major leagues in America from 1924 to 1948 and was a player manager until 1954. That's three decades as in the major leagues of the Negro baseball leagues. And I hope that the nomination conveys his significance and his association with this Brackenridge community in South Austin. Thank you. And I can answer any questions. I've lived with this project for 5 years.
Thank you very much. We very much appreciate your comments. Okay, we will now entertain a motion from the board.
This is Steve Klein. I move that we recommend this property for listing under B, ethnic heritage Black at the local level of significance, which the documentation fully justifies.
A second.
Did you get the second, Hannah?
I heard two people speak at the same time, and I'm not sure who it was.
Okay. I'm sorry, who was that who seconded?
I know I was one of the people. Is Andrea.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, thanks very much. Any discussion from the board?
I've just got a question. I don't know the technical reason for these things, but why is this only a local level of significance?
I'm sorry, I was not able to unmute. I guess the nomination as it came in, it didn't, you know, we just didn't argue anything for state that would, for state level of significance, national level of significance would have required a great deal of comparative research. And I'm not sure if Terry wants to pursue the state level with the additional research, the comparative research that were required for that. So this is just how we thought this was the most efficient way to put it through. It's not saying doesn't have.
Okay. I just was curious. I didn't know. So, okay.
I had a similar question in that these are one of 357 verified African-American settlements in the state of Texas. And as that class of place, that is a Freedom Colony or Freedmen's Community, it would legitimately, and there is a body of research to show that that this represents that place type that this house and that this is associated with. So not to complicate or make it harder for it to go through, but in terms of available evidence to make the argument for state significance, I think that there's much available. You've already noted the work on the local level of Michelle Mears, but there are considerable books and research readily available about how this is emblematic of a African-American state settlement pattern.
Andrew, wouldn't that argument push it towards criterion C or something rather than B?
I don't necessarily think so. I'm speaking more of just the level of significance.
Okay. Well, I mean, criterion B identifies a specific significant person associated with the property and the importance of the person. So that's just why I asked the question. I don't want to make this more difficult. I was just curious.
So we might, I think if it's significant for its association, as the neighborhood that it's in as a Freedman's Colony, then that would be criterion A, I think is what Mark is saying.
Well, some other criterion besides B, I mean, yeah.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah,
Jerry, hi. I think we started out with criterion A in consideration and talked a lot about about the Breckenridge neighborhood, but we thought that we wanted the focus to be on Wells. I think that it's, you know, that it should be listed under criterion A for its association with this African-American community that was in Swisher's edition and developed along Newton Street and around on Elizabeth Street in South Austin. And I think that we have sufficient documentation either in the nomination or that available to me that I could put, that I could add that to the nomination if the staff thinks that's appropriate and the board thinks that's appropriate, the commission.
This is Greg. So would you consider criterion A in the area of settlement or community planning and development? Is that the direction that you would
community,
take this in, Terry?
Community planning and development. The settlement is kind of ephemeral. We don't mm-hmm. know exactly where it started. We believe that some of the people were descendants of slaves of the Bolden Plantation and the Swisher Plantation, but we don't know exactly where they lived after emancipation. But in this particular area on these blocks, St. Annie AME Church is on this block, Goodwill Baptist Church is on this block, and these houses, of which the Willie Wells House is one, they represent a stable working class African-American community centered around the segregated school and these seminal African-American churches. And I think that community planning and development, who planned it, that's, you know, I don't know that, but I think that I can talk about how it developed here along this street and these blocks.
Okay, well, yes, excuse me, this is Greg again. I think under the current criterion claimed B in the areas of entertainment, recreation, and ethnic heritage, they could probably be well supported at the state level of significance. I think it would be helpful to place it, therefore, into a larger context, not just the recognition of this community as a freedom colony, which should be explicitly stated in the nomination, but widening it a little bit in terms of other Negro players from Texas. That's a sort of statement about that is the sort of thing that the Park Service staff might be looking for in order to support state level. Their requirements for the distinction between local and state, they grant us a lot of the authority to make that claim. National level is a whole nother matter. So that's one thing that could be done, as well as is, you know, instead of looking at Wells in isolation as a baseball player in the Negro Leagues, expand it just a little bit more and possibly see if there are similar properties like this associated specifically with baseball players.
So Greg, this is Bonnie. So I'm getting my notes right. So we're talking about for criterion B, expanding that for state level of significance, also adding back and some of Terry's information in addition for the community planning and development. But would that, are the board members or Greg, are you suggesting the criterion A for state level, as you know, that, you know, for the board members who don't know, we can have different levels of significance for different criteria. Mm-hmm. Are we saying local level for community planning and development and B state level possibly?
That's possibly, but you know, with the understanding that for every criterion and every area of significance claim, there has to be a specific argument that supports that claim within the nomination. So it will be up to the applicant to determine, you know, if that amount of work is possible here. So the question to, can we bump this up to state under the criterion claimed right now? Yes, I think that's possible. Even if a statement can be made about the likelihood of similar properties associated with Negro League players statewide could be made, even if there hasn't been a survey of such. If we recognize this as a rare property type and can reasonably say that is the case, then that's one of the options for bumping this to state level. I don't think it would take a lot of extra work in order to do that. And I agree that this community should be expressly identified as a freedmen's community. And, you know, so that should definitely be added to the nomination too.
Greg?
Yes.
Are you saying that you think that I agree. I think there's potential, absolutely, and reason to do state for both criterion A and B.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I understand that, you know, I don't want to burden the THC and the preparer with more work. But are you, if that's, you know, that would maybe slow it or prevent it from getting there. So I don't want to introduce a motion that would be too onerous.
I just want to make sure I
understand, like, are you saying state level for both A and B are sort of within the, without a whole lot of extra work, those two, or just one of the two?
I think, in my opinion, criterion B for sure. Mm-hmm. Criterion A is certainly possible, but I would defer to the applicant because that would take more effort on her part to make that happen.
Unmute me.
You're unmuted.
I don't know how to go here. I might have just really stepped in it in a way. My client would like to be recommended for listing today and will not support further research. I can work on the nomination and flesh this out, but basically I've been working on this as a volunteer for the past 2 years. And I don't know how to proceed. Yeah.
Terry, it's obviously wonderful as it is. I just want to make clear that I think it's fabulous and I would like it to move forward. My only real fundamental thing to get across here is the belief that we could take this to the state level. And if that takes a whole lot more research, then I understand if you're not willing to do that. But
it's not that I'm not willing to do that. I can't.
Sentences, then it seems like we should, you know, I would like to move that we retain criterion B and at a level of significance that's state.
One thing we could, it sounds like the state level of significance would be within reach. I mean, I agree. I think I really commend the owners for keeping, mm-hmm. you know, the size in that neighborhood. It's so unusual to retain it the way it is. So, you know, I commend them for all of that. So one thing we could do would say, suggest criterion B at the state level, which might not require too much additional work. Mm-hmm. And then adding A at the local level, if staff thinks that, you know, they have a case for state level there, I think, Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, staff can decide to bump it up without having to come back to the board. Is that correct?
Yes. One thing to make it smoother would just be perhaps make a recommendation under criterion B at state level, and we will all discuss the possibility of doing A on our own, because we would definitely like to see the full mm-hmm. full story and recognition. But you know, in order to get this through quickly, I think criterion B state level, that's the easiest path to go. And we can add a few things to the nomination in recognition of this community as a freedom colony without having to claim another criterion in order to recognize that.
Perfect.
I apologize for opening up a can of worms. I really only wanted to ask the question, which I think Greg just answered finally. It just seems odd to me that a person of his stature that was, you know, a Hall of Fame inductee and has been reinterred at the state cemetery, that seems like it's a no-brainer for state significance to me. But I don't want to make this harder for Terry. So, And the criterion A, I think, is legitimate. And maybe Greg has the best path for that.
We would be more than happy to carry criterion B over, you know, and do what needs to be done to get it at state level.
Well, I didn't make the nomination. I was only asking the question. So.
Okay, so do we need a new motion? Tim, do we need a new motion, and does it have to be the same person, which would be Steve, to make a new motion, or can anybody make the new motion?
I believe we need a new motion from the original individual and the original second to expand criterion B to the state level of significance.
So that would be Steve and then Andrea for the second.
Okay. I move that we recommend this property for listing under B, ethnic heritage Black, at the state level of significance, which the documentation fully justifies.
Nice second.
Okay, are we all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, motion carries. We have two properties left, I believe. First is the Baylor University Female Department.
Just one second. Okay. The Baylor University male and female department nominations originated as a student project headed by Carol McCauley Jamison, a senior lecturer at Baylor University. Carol and THC's staff, we finalized the drafts for you today. And here we go. So both sites are in Independence, Washington County. Located 1/2 mile west of Independence and initially the site of Independence Academy, the nominated property, the female department, was the campus of Baylor University Female Department, later Baylor Female College, from 1845 to 1886. Along with the male campus, which is nominated separately, the sites were the original home of Baylor University. Following the university's removal to Belton and Waco in the late 19th century, the female department property continued to operate as an educational institution until approximately 1889. The site remains relatively undisturbed and retains high integrity. Preliminary investigations have shown that the 5.8-acre nominated boundary includes the core area of the 19th century campus, but the known site is potentially up to 14 acres. The remains of a three-story Greek Revival academic building, dormitory, dining hall, and kitchen, and other features are collectively counted as one contributing site. There are also three contributing objects, a historical marker plaque, a boundary marker, and gate pillars that are direct and indirect products of the Texas 1936 Texas Centennial, the context of which was recorded in Monuments and Buildings of Texas, the Texas Centennial MPS. Three non-contributing sources are mid to late 20th century park improvements to the nominated property. The Baylor Male and Female Department archaeological sites in Independence document the earliest period of higher education development in Texas. Religious organizations and private interests led the 19th century college founding movement in Texas, and the first generation of institutions opened in the period between independence from Mexico and statehood. By 1860, there were 25 denominational and private colleges in Texas. The Union Association of the Baptist Church established Baylor University in 1845. The nominated property is the first campus of that institution. When a second campus for male instruction opened 1/2 mile southeast in 1851, the nominated site became Baylor University Female Department, but it later changed names to Baylor Female College. Until it moved to Belton in 1886, the college offered female students from across the South progressive courses of study in classical instruction and ornamental training. From 1887 to 1889, William Carey Crane Male and Female College and Binford University operated briefly at the former Baylor site. In the late 1930s, the state of Texas, Baylor University, and alumni placed a commemorative centennial marker on the academic building ruins and erected entrance gates to the property. The Baylor University female site is nominated to the National Register of Historic Places at the statewide level of significance under Criterion A in the area of education and Criterion D in the area of archaeology. As the only known archaeological sites of its type in Texas, the Baylor University female and male departments can yield important information about 19th century collegiate education and the cultural history of the men and women who lived, studied, and worked there. Established by the Union Association of the Baptist Church and currently jointly owned by Baylor University and University of Mary Hardin Baylor, the nominated property meets criteria consideration A, religious properties, because it derives its significance from its historical association with higher education. The commemorative resources are significant under criterion A in the area of education because they represent an effort by state and private organizations to recognize the Baylor University's founding and pay homage to the institution's original site by establishing a state park. Criteria consideration F, however, is not claimed because the objects are of secondary significance to the larger archaeological site. Period of significance is 1845 to 1889 and 1936 to 1939, representing the period the nominated property served as an institution of higher education in years during which the state of Texas and private citizens erected the commemorative properties. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Bonnie. And is there anyone here to speak on behalf of this nomination? Okay, we will entertain a motion from the board.
This is Steve. I move that we recommend this property for listing under A, education, and D, archaeology at the state level of significance, which the documentation fully justifies.
Zurich, I second.
Okay, any discussion?
This is Nesta. I actually have kind of an issue with D. I think the documentation is great for A, but D, information potential, no one's ever stuck a shovel in the ground to verify that deposits exist. So I don't know where that falls when we're talking about National Register nominations. I know how it would when we were doing, you know, if we do it that's reviewed by the state under a project, but I'm not sure we can, I understand whether or not this can move forward if we haven't verified that deposits are actually in the ground.
Working with Carol, Carol's student project, and maybe it's just more of a clarification in the nomination, but Carol and Carol's work indicated, I guess just, I don't know what you would call it, like windshield survey kind of the female college campus. And then the earlier archaeological investigations for the male department that were undertaken by James Bailu, it was my understanding that his preliminary documentation is what sort of underscores the sort of potential for data, you know, recovery in, at this site. So, but no, I mean, it's not, but no, you're right. Nothing, the investigations have not been as thorough at this site.
And I'm not saying we're right at all. Like, I'm not trying to argue.
Yeah.
But maybe mentioning that or kind of spotlighting that a little bit more that,
okay,
you know, the sister site has definitely produced, you know, information potential, and we anticipate this one would as well. Like, because obviously there are ruins there. It's never been recorded as an archaeological site with the state either. I checked the atlas, neither of them have.
Right.
So there's no trinomial associated with them. That might be great to get to.
Yeah, this is Eric. I agree with Nesta's assessment on this. I mean, a lot of this stuff has been redacted as far as under site features on page 9. I mean, the presence of features would suggest there are archaeological deposits. So I think maybe we're just only seeing part of the picture here.
Eric, did you not have the unredacted version?
I guess I don't.
Okay, I can.
Wait, what was the reason for the redaction? I don't guess I have the unredacted either.
Typically we do redact archaeological nominations. These are kind of unique in that they're both public parks. I conferred with the Baylor University applicant and they recommended just general redactions. So anyway, that's sort of the reasoning behind it. But
okay.
Bonnie, I didn't have the unredacted version either. And it made it difficult to review this nomination, at least for me.
Yeah, this is Steve. I did get the redacted version.
Receive it in a separate email or a link to it in an email from Judy that I think had links to the board meeting. It was in an email with a couple other links, but I think it could have easily been missed, maybe.
I guess I did.
Because it explains the archaeology. So, you know.
Oh, my apologies.
I guess I have another question too. I'm sorry to be the troublemaker on what everybody wants to be done. The other question I had is why they were nominated separately and not as a discontiguous district. Because I noticed on the female, on this nomination that it says, you know, it's associated with African-American history. This particular parcel doesn't seem to be, but the other certainly is. Mm-hmm. That just was a little confusing.
Greg, can you answer this question? I think that this was a technical issue we talked about way early on in this process. And I just...
Sure. I mean, we have the option to nominate properties in discontiguous districts. It is really rare. Usually that happens when there is some unity between the portions of the property that has since been interrupted, either through demolition or subsequent development and so forth. And so we recognize these as two, well, one, each site on its own merits on it, you know, is eligible. And since they had a shared history, but obviously one is the male campus and one is the female campus, they have their own stories to tell. So the Park Service generally, it's not that they frown upon it, but this is a cleaner approach, and they'll be listed, you know, concurrently. It's just that they're separated enough that trying to nominate it discontiguously, the Park Service would probably frown upon that.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And then, you know, building on a little bit what Greg said during the research for the land ownership, I mean, these parts were never connected property wise. There's a big, you know, at least just a half mile distance between them. But the university did not own all of the property. They owned these two separate areas.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, this is Eric. One other thing I might add is on the, I guess it's page 3 of the nomination, it just references under criteria consideration A, but yet up in the block above that, it says A and D.
So maybe do you think it's because we have listed criterion A for education and then criteria consideration A, two different things, religious properties. Is that what you mean?
Right. Should we also not list D under that same heading as well?
Under criteria considerations?
Yes.
No, criteria consideration D would be something different than the four criteria listed above it. Okay. So it's criterion A, criterion D, and then it meets criteria consideration A.
Okay.
Bonnie, does the language about criteria consideration A need to be included in the motion? I don't believe that it was.
It doesn't have to be.
Thanks.
I wrote it down that it did.
Okay.
I have a quick question.
Whether or not it was, I don't know.
I have a quick question about recreation and culture, especially since it's a park and because of the association with the events surrounding commemoration and the centennial.
So the centennial celebration, that was, these commemorative markers and monuments, even the ones that the park entrance gates that you would might better associate with entertainment and recreation, those objects derive their significance under commemoration and not as in the larger Texas Centennial celebration, which under that MPS, it's recognizing basically, you know, the state recognizing its own history and not so much as in establishing the park. The park, establishing the park was sort of secondary to this commemorative, these commemorative objects. These are really for that purpose. And so, so they're included under the heading of what we covered in the centennial MPS. And so, I don't know, I'm not really explaining that clearly, but my apologies. But anyway, but these objects are more significant as commemorative objects and looking back on Baylor University, looking back over their heritage and not for establishing the park. And since we didn't, the period of significance doesn't go past the 1930s when both these sites became parks. That's even further reason why we're not including it under that sort of heading, I guess. I'm sorry, that's not very clear.
Okay, any further discussion?
Yes, this is Sayla. Bonnie, I was interested in learning more about the stated cultural affiliation on this nomination with African American history. I can see the direct correlation in the other nomination, but in this one, I felt like it wasn't as strong. On page, let's see here. I'm not sure what page it's on, but there's a sentence that says, undoubtedly African Americans made an impact on the site, likely as laborers before and after emancipation. So it goes on to talk about that, but it's not as substantiated or as strong as I think that it could be. I just feel like it can be strengthened with some research around that to add a little bit more context. And then it also talks about the slaveholding economy in this area. So I just feel like either that needs to be strengthened or really looked at to actually say that there was a cultural affiliation with African Americans on this site. I think the author's right, I'm sure it is, but I just feel like alongside of the other one, it's not as strong as sure. A direct link.
We can absolutely add more information to substantiate that claim.
Any other discussion from the board? Okay, so I don't believe anybody moved to amend the original motion, if I'm not mistaken. So what we have currently is inclusion of the Baylor University Female Department in the National Register under Criterion A and Criterion D at the state level of significance. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, the motion carries. And finally, we have the Baylor University Male Department.
The male department is a half mile southeast of the female department site. Private property owners have restricted access to known portions of the male department campus site, an area of about 30 acres, and the boundary was drawn along the legal property lines of the portion that is accessible. Investigations of the nominated site area, which is approximately 3 acres, establishes that it retains sufficient integrity to meet national register criteria. The site consists of subsurface foundations of 2 academic buildings, footprints of additional architectural and cultural structures, intact archaeological deposits associated with Baylor University, and which was on the property from 1851 to 1886, and then used by William Carey Crane male and female colleges till 1889. The remains of these are collectively counted as one contributing site. 1936 Texas Centennial Historical Marker, directed to commemorate the university meets registration requirements outlined in the MPS Monuments and Buildings, MPS, and is a contributing object. 2 non-contributing structures, a pavilion and bell tower, are modern improvements that commemorate it, its significance to the university's history and to function as a park property. Previous archaeological research at the male department site identified foundations of former academic buildings, dormitories, and agricultural structures. Cultural materials found are building materials, kitchen artifacts like ceramics and glassware buttons, Catholic ephemera, and artifacts associated with the educational and agricultural functions of the properties. These items date from the period of significance through the 20th century. In 1849, Baylor University trustees acquired several parcels of land south of Independence to serve as a second campus for Baylor's male student body. By 1868, it totaled 37 acres. The male department offered students from across the South advanced courses of study and theological training, classical instruction, law, and medicine. And its graduates were among the state's first native-born professional class of politicians, attorneys, physicians, clergy, and businessmen. The male department operated in Independence until 1886, when it relocated to Waco. Upon its closure, the campus briefly operated as the home of William Carey Crane male and female colleges. Extant data also documents later areas of the property's use as the Holy Angels Orphanage and Industrial School for Negro Boys, which closed circa 1910, and the Clay Tenant Farm, which from 1927 to circa 1950. The state of Texas erected a historical marker at the site to commemorate the founding of Baylor University as part of the 1936 Texas Centennial celebration. Today, both sites are preserved as parks that commemorate Baylor's founding. The male department site is nominated to the National Register of Historic Places at the statewide level of significance under criterion A in the area of education and D in the area of archaeology. Like the site, the Centennial marker is significant under A in the area of education because it represents an effort by state and private organizations to recognize Baylor's founding and its significance to the development of higher education in the state. Criteria consideration F for commemorative properties is not claimed because the object is of secondary significance to the archaeological site. Period of significance is 1851 to 1889 and 1936, which represents the period the nominated property served as an institution of higher education and year the state of Texas erected the commemorative marker. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, Bonnie. Is there anyone here who'd like to discuss this nomination in the audience? Okay, we will entertain a motion from the board.
This is Eric Schrader. I move that we recommend this site be listed under criteria A for education, criterion D for archaeology and historic and non-Aboriginal, and criteria A for religious properties in conformance with the level of documentation that's been provided.
This is Nesta, and I second.
Okay, thanks very much. Any discussion from the board?
I'm back. I'm sorry. I thought this was really very interesting. I mean, both these nominations together, the archaeology is a little bit, could use a little help organization-wise. I did get the unredacted version, and it took me until I was almost through the nomination to realize there were actually deposits associated with these, you know, other than the foundations, that there were features, underground features for archaeology. That's kind of a big thing. I'm sorry, all y'all preservationists may not get as excited, but just maybe highlighting that a little earlier, that there are subsurface deposits associated that are intact and intact with the African-American occupation as well. I noticed the period of significance stops at 1889, which is right when the orphanage is starting to come in with the African-American kids. And there were deposits, intact deposits associated with that. I realize that doesn't fall, well, it still could fall under education. Maybe thinking about extending that period of significance and adding that African-American component in.
Sure, absolutely. I'll talk to the applicant. I think that's a great idea.
Other comments? Okay, so the motion is to move the Baylor University Mail Department forward to the National Register under criteria A and D at the state level of significance. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. And with that, we are done, folks. This was a long one, but thank you so much to all of you for your service to the board. And just a couple of quick things that I need to say before we make the motion to adjourn. The next meeting will be on May 15th, which will likely be on Zoom once again. If you could, please email your forms, your scanned forms to Judy by Monday of next week and send in the actual copies via snail mail later. And that's it. So now I will make a motion to adjourn at 1:14 p.m.
Hey, Tim, I don't know if it should be on the record or not, but since having technical difficulties and didn't vote on the first nomination, I just wanted, and since we're doing voice voting, I wanted to make sure that Hannah didn't have me recorded as voting on the first.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I didn't. So you on, okay, so just have you, I guess, absent, I would say, on the Aurora apartment?
I don't know how to handle that technically because
I'll figure that out. Thank you for pointing that out. I'll say absent unless Judy tells me different. Thank you.
That's an easy fix, but thanks for pointing it out, Mark. I hadn't noticed that either. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so can I get a motion to adjourn?
I move to adjourn from Tara.
I second.
Okay, motion passes.
Forget mine.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Aye.
Aye. Again.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Thanks, Hannah.
Okay. All right. Nice recording.